Chapter 65. DMS Mist Shark. Major Respira looked around the hold of the Mist Shark at his command. His marines had performed with most excellent discipline. Their losses had been serious, but not utterly outrageous, and if they had not accomplished absolutely every objective on their mission, their main objectives had been achieved. The presence of his force had inflicted a paralytic fear on the citizens of Spire Albion. The landing shipyard had been destroyed, and it would take months, if not years, to rebuild after the internal economic chaos bound to ensue in Spire Albion. Cavendish had recovered her book, though Espira had not been made privy to its significance, and every duplicate copy of the volume had been destroyed with the monastery. He had led his men on a mission of extraordinary ambition and extraordinary danger. More important, thank God in heaven, Espira had also led most of them out again. His losses had been lighter than he'd dared to hope for. Of course, he'd paid a price to do it. He'd led an attack on a temple of the Way and its resident monks. He'd set fire to a habal full of civilians. Enemies, true, but civilians nonetheless. If he hadn't, there was no way his men would have made it out with such light losses. He had traded the lives of people he did not know for those of men he did. That was, he supposed, human nature. He was proud of his men. He was proud of what they had accomplished, how hard they had trained, and how that training had paid off. He was proud of the blow they'd dealt to the Albion menace. He was proud that he'd taken command of them, knowing that he had a better chance to bring more Marines home alive than any other commanding officer available for the mission. But he was not proud of the things he'd had to do to get them home again. And, he reminded himself grimly, they weren't home yet. The weary men were stacked fairly closely in the airship's hold. Most of his marines, being good soldiers, were already asleep. Some were still too wound up from the action and were speaking quietly together. Some of the wounded lay quietly suffering as they waited their turn with Mist Shark's doctor. A quartet of seasoned veterans had simply broken out a deck of cards and begun playing, despite the dimness of the hold. The mood wasn't as joyous as it could have been. Men had been wounded. Men had fallen. The elation that each man felt in having survived the mission was tempered by the knowledge that others like him had not been so fortunate. No, not joy, but definitely relief. Relief that it was over. Relief that the Reaper had not chosen them today. Relief that they were going home. Though, he reminded himself again, they weren't home yet. But they had a good running start toward getting there. Siriaco approached through the gloom. A tall sergeant ducked under the beams that supported the airship's deck above them, nodded to Espira, saluted, and said,
"She wants to see you in her cabin, sir."
"Of course she does," Espira said. He sighed and pushed himself up from his comfortable bed of lumpy cloth sacks. "Time enough for sleep when I'm dead, I suppose." Siriaco made a grimacing expression that passed for a pained smile.
"You want me to come with you?"
"No, Sergeant. I expect that if she was going to snap, she'd have done it before now. I'll be fine." Siriaco frowned but nodded.
"I'll ride herd on the boys for you, sir."
"Make sure everyone's strapped in and battened down. Then get some sleep. I'm sure it won't take long," Espira replied. He started climbing the steep staircase to the deck and hoped that he knew what he was talking about. The Mist Shark was not a ship of the Armada. The heavily tarred planking and decks looked smudged and dirty, though he imagined it provided excellent protection from the elements. And of course it made the ship less visible in low-lighting conditions, which was doubtless useful to a captain who was up to no good. That said, however, The ship was run with all the professionalism of a vessel of the Armada, even if the crew looked like a pack of cutthroats and scoundrels. Certainly the Mist Shark's gunnery had been excellent, efficiently destroying the landing shipyard. Granted, any target that could not shoot back was hardly a challenge, much less one a bare 100 yards away, but not a single blast had gone to waste, and the Mist Shark had managed to destroy some 30 times her own weight in enemy merchant craft, as well as millions of crowns of priceless Albion infrastructure. The men around him were a crew of evil-eyed, pitiless apes, but they had done good service to Spire Aurora. He did not need to like them to respect their ability. Espira reached the door to Madame Cavendish's cabin and raised his hand to knock.
"Come in, Major,"
she called, before his knuckles had touched the door. Espira suppressed a shiver and entered the cabin. Cavendish sat inside at a small tea table, calmly, primly, her gown's bodice unfastened and hanging down to her waist. She was clad in only a thin shift from the waist up. Mist Shark's doctor, a wiry piker covered in outlandish tattoos, was tying off a bandage that had been wound round and round Madame Cavendish's ribs. Her position left an unseemly amount of skin on display, and Espira forced himself not to look at the smooth strength of the woman's shoulders or the clean, graceful line of her neck. It would not do to permit himself to think of Cavendish as a woman. She was a monster. She still held the slender volume in one hand and was reading with unnervingly steady attention, even as the doctor ministered to her. There was a bunk bed in the room. The lower berth had clearly been reserved for Cavendish, but the top was occupied by the bags of miscellaneous objects she had insisted upon bringing aboard. It took Espira a moment to notice that Sark was in the room. The bandaged, wounded warrior-born wasn't on one of the bunks. Instead, he lay under Madame Cavendish's bunk, like some hideous spider lurking beneath an imperfect bit of decorative moulding. Espira could see for a second the glitter of gold-green light reflecting from warrior-born eyes, and then it was gone.
"Major,"
Cavendish said, smiling faintly,
"the good doctor is nearly finished ministering to me. Do sit down."
Espira doffed his hat and bowed politely before seating himself in the room's only other chair across the small table from Cavendish.
"How can I be of service, madame?"
"I need your professional assessment,"
she replied.
"How quickly could your men seize this ship?"
For a second, the doctor's hands froze in place. Espira frowned, staring at Cavendish, looking for some clue in her features as to how she expected him to answer. Judging from her expression, Cavendish had noticed the doctor's reaction too. Her mouth quirked up at one corner.
"Hypothetically speaking, of course."
Ah. She wanted the man to hear what he had to say.
The crew is outnumbered and outgunned," Espira replied slowly. "And my men are the best. On the other hand, we don't know what measures the crew has put in place to even the odds in such an action. But I am confident to say that my men could take this ship 8 or 9 times in 10.
"That is excellent news,"
Cavendish said.
"Doctor, have you finished?"
"Aye up,"
the doctor muttered to Cavendish. The man never looked at her face.
"It should heal up fine.
Can't see as the ball tore any bone off the ribs, so no splinters.
Clean it twice a day, fresh bandages each time, and don't go jumping about."
"You'll tend to it, Doctor,"
Cavendish replied.
"I will see you after breakfast and after dinner. Plan accordingly."
The man clearly resented the command, but he only touched his fingers to the brim of a hat he was not wearing, and hurried out of the cabin.
Espira waited for the man to go before turning to Cavendish and asking,
"Why?"
"Our pace is too slow,"
Cavendish replied as she carefully slipped back into her gown.
"If that does not change, we may not reach our escort before Albion's fleet catches up to us. I notified Captain Ransom of this fact several times and have received no reply. I do not care to be ignored. Tea?"
"Yes, thank you," Espira said.
Cavendish rose smoothly, turned her back on the Major, and stopped. It dawned on him after a moment that she was waiting on him, and Espira rose immediately.
"Madame?"
"Button me up, if you would, Major."
"It would be my pleasure," Espira said, stepping forward.
"It had best not be,"
Cavendish said, in a poisonously sweet tone. Espira felt his spine go rigid. He forced himself to inhale and exhale deeply. Then he went about fastening up a score of buttons on the back of Cavendish's gown with quick, efficient motions. A few moments later they both sat back down at the table for the tea Madame Cavendish prepared. As she poured, the dismal grey light of the mists outside shifted and grew brighter. The grey of the mezzosphere gave way to the cerulean blue of the aerosphere as the ship emerged into open sky. A moment after that, the door opened abruptly, and Calliope Ransom strode into the cabin. Mist Shark's lean captain had a vulpine air about her, and her green eyes flickered with raw anger. Her dark aeronaut's leathers were worn and of excellent quality, as were the blade at her side, the gauntlet on her hand, and a trio of pistols slung one after another on her belt.
"Good morning, Captain,"
Cavendish said in a pleasant tone.
"Will you join us for tea?"
"No, thank you."
Ransom stared hard at Espira for a moment, her eyes calculating. Then she nodded a few times and said,
"This is my ship, and while you are valued customers, you are guests on my vessel, and by God in heaven you will comport yourselves as such."
"Or what follows?"
Cavendish asked in a gentle tone.
"You leave the ship,"
Captain Ransom said simply.
"Do you mean to force me over the rail, Captain?"
"No need," Ransom replied. "Santos has already opened the cargo doors in the hold below this cabin, including the one on the exterior ventral hull."
She tapped a toe on the wooden deck.
"Beneath this deck there is nothing but sky, and the explosive charges that will shatter this floor and send everything in the cabin tumbling down into the mist, along with you, your creepy attaché, and this sorry son of a bitch from Aurora."
Cavendish tilted her head sharply.
"Excuse me?"
"If I don't come out of this cabin within the next 10 minutes, Santos sets off the charges. If I emerge from this cabin acting odd or out of character, he sets off the charges. If he so much as gets a bad feeling that you're up to something, he has orders to set off the charges and kill you all."
Silence grew in the room. Espira cleared his throat.
"I believe you are bluffing, Captain Ransom." The captain's sharp smile grew sharper.
"Am I? I wonder,"
Cavendish mused aloud.
"If you are truly the kind of person who would rig her guest quarters to murder her guests, should they become inconvenient?"
Captain Ransom cocked an eyebrow.
"I wonder if you are the sort of person who would make an extremely foolish threat simply to get her extremely busy host's attention."
"Touché,"
Cavendish murmured.
"Could you not have taken a moment to speak to me? It does seem polite."
"Polite is lovely for tea parties," Ransom replied. "It is of limited value when one is attempting to outrun the fastest and best-trained airship fleet the world has ever known." She looked at each of them. "A fact you should consider when calculating whether or not you should attempt to take my ship. You might take her, but you won't take her whole. And all of Albion will be on your heels in hours, if they're not there already.
Meaning?
Ispira asked.
Meaning that your marines aren't aeronauts. They can't sail like aeronauts, they can't think like aeronauts, and they can't manage the ship as well as aeronauts. And that goes double for whoever you put in charge of them. If you kill me and take my ship, you're never going to get back to Spire Aurora alive. The Albions will catch you and kill you. It's as simple as that.
Cavendish's mouth spread into a wide smile, one that looked eerily out of place on her features.
I believe I can respect you, Captain,
she said. She stared at Ransom with the smile fixed in place, took a slow sip of tea, and then said,
The ship has slowed.
Ransom's brow furrowed. She kept her features composed, but Ispira had the impression that she was nearly as unnerved by Cavendish as he was.
How could you possibly know that?
Am I right?
You are, Ransom said.
Why?
Corrosion in the Haslet cage, my engineer says, the captain replied.
She cast an aggravated glance toward the stern of the ship.
It's causing irregular power flow. We had to back off on the throttle or risk blowing out runs and relays.
Can it be corrected?
Cavendish asked.
Not without taking the core offline to scour the Haslet cage, Ransom said. We would be forced to rely on wind-powered sails until the cage could be cleaned and reassembled. We can run at 85%, or we can stop using the web entirely and trust in the wind.
And why do we not do that?
Ispira managed to keep from wincing. Cavendish might be fiendishly clever and dangerous, but the question betrayed a vast ignorance of aeronautics. Ransom managed to answer as though the question had not sounded like one coming from a curious child.
Wind-powered sails are efficient, since they cost no energy consumption from the power core, but they lack the maneuverability offered by an etheric web, she said. A ship running under wind-powered sails makes its best speed amongst only a limited arc of possible directions, and can be easily outmaneuvered by a powered ship. And if you don't have a good strong wind, a web-driven ship will outrun a wind-powered ship.
You're saying that relying upon the sails creates too many variables,
Cavendish said thoughtfully.
I'm saying that it dispenses with too many options, Ransom replied. If we disassemble the Haslet cage, all we have are the sails. No web, no shroud, no weapons. If the fleet sighted us, we could do nothing but run, and if the wind was not favourable, we would be rapidly destroyed. Once we reach the rendezvous, we can repair the cage.
Why then?
Because we'll have an escort to screen for us, should a fleet ship find us, she said. We'll be able to sail down into the mist while the escort engages the enemy.
She arched an eyebrow.
This little lesson in aeronautics has cost this ship in terms of efficiency because I was here answering your questions instead of doing everything I possibly could to keep us all alive. Enjoy your tea, madame. If I can avoid any further interruptions, this should be over soon.
Cavendish set the teacup and saucer down carefully.
I'm not sure I like your tone, Captain.
Captain Ransom put her right fist on her hip.
This is my ship, madame, she said. Consequently, I'm the one who makes decisions about tone here. Do us all a favour. Drink your tea like a good trog, and stop interfering with professionals.
Cavendish's eyes flashed with a spark of heat, echoed by the kindling of what looked like a tiny star in the crimson crystal at her throat. Ispira grimaced. He put down his teacup and shifted his weight slightly in his seat, so that he could throw himself rapidly to the floor should violence erupt.
You are ill-mannered, Captain,
Madame Cavendish said. Ransom smirked. Feel free to leave my ship whenever you wish, you arrogant bit.
and just then a bell began to ring at frantic pace.
"General quarters!"
boomed the enormous executive officer's voice out on the ship's deck. Ransom spat a foul curse and flung herself at the cabin's door. Just as she opened it, there was a howl of discharges from a broadside of etheric cannon, an enormous flash of light, and a sound like thousands of dry bones snapping.
"Strap in!"
Ispira shouted to Cavendish, even as he rose and rushed after Captain Ransom. He dashed out onto the deck in time to see Mist Shark's entire starboard etheric web shot away from the ship. It was on fire, adrift and falling with lazy grace back toward the mist of the mezzosphere. The ship lurched, its drag suddenly unbalanced, its stern slewing to port as its bow rotated in the direction of the missing web. There was a rushing sound, and scarcely 500 yards away, a lean, sleek airship flying Albion's scarlet, azure, and white colours sailed up into view from beneath the Mist Shark, with seemingly effortless speed and grace. The name on the prow declared her the AMS Predator. Espira clenched his teeth. Skippers in the Auroran Armada and merchant fleet alike spoke of the privateer ship in hushed, angry tones. Predator had been single-handedly responsible for nearly a quarter of Spire Aurora's merchant losses in the 2 years leading up to this war. Before he could finish the thought, Predator's guns howled again, this time firing overhead, snipping off Mist Shark's dorsal web as neatly as a seamstress with her shears. This time the web came slithering down onto the ship, burning, sparks flying off it with miniature lightning snaps of discharging static electricity whenever it touched non-wooden material, such as the Mist Shark's crew. Ispira looked up and saw burning web falling directly toward him. He seized Captain Ransom by the belt and pulled her back into the doorway of the cabin an instant before the web reached her. It struck the metal doorknob instead, sparking a bright flash of light that left a scorch mark on the metal. Even as the web settled, Mist Shark became further unbalanced, her nose rising. Ispira automatically snapped a pair of safety lines onto a pair of nearby hooks, in time to use their support to keep from being rocked off his feet from the ship's wallowing.
"Damn it! How?"
Captain Ransom snarled as the web piled down atop her ship, hundreds of feet long and a nearly equal amount across. The deck was rapidly beginning to look like the inside of a silkweaver nest. She snapped her goggles down over her eyes.
"Santos!"
she bellowed.
"Signal rockets now! Keep them going!"
"Aye!"
boomed the executive officer. A second later there was a rushing sound, and a comet trailing a blazing tail of fire lifted into the sky.
"Firefighting party to the deck!"
she shouted.
"Aye, skipper!"
"Guns! Fire at will!"
Seconds later, 10 etheric cannon opened fire on Predator. But the lean ship had already altered its course and abruptly dropped lower, evading the broadside and plunging back into the mists below. Just before it did, there was a rushing sound, and rockets raced out from Predator, exploding 1,000 yards overhead into a thick, dense cloud of yellow smoke. Ransom stared after the vanishing ship, her eyes narrowed in thought. Then she nodded and shouted,
"Pilot! Course change. 20 degrees west."
20 degrees west, aye."
"Full speed ahead. Everything you've got."
A second pair of Mist Shark's blazing signal rockets raced up into the blue sky.
"Aye, skipper."
The ship groaned as it banked and accelerated, wobbling like a drunkard. A wooden keg that had not been properly secured bounced across the steeply angled deck and tumbled over the side of the ship into the abyss below.
"Is this wise, Captain?"
Ispira asked quietly.
"No,"
Ransom replied bluntly.
"Goggles."
Ispira nodded and secured his eye protection, while Ransom drew her blade and began hacking at the ether silk webbing blocking her passage to the deck.
"We can't force him to fight with half our web shot away," she said. We're too slow on our feet now. If we try it, he'll outmaneuver us and take out the rest of our web within minutes, or work the angles to position himself at weak points in our fields of fire and hammer through our shroud. His ship is lighter and faster, so we can't outdive him or escape into the mist, lamed as we are. Our only chance is to get to our escort before Captain Grimm turns us into a barge. Espira drew his sword and began hacking away at the ether silk as soon as Ransom had progressed enough to give him room to swing it. She glanced at him and nodded silent approval.
Captain Grimm, Espira said, there are a lot of people in Aurora who are coming to despise the man.
Ransom bared her teeth, her eyes glittering as another pair of her ship's rockets raced out above and behind them.
And to think, they weren't even married to him.